I'll start with Judy McNary. She is a CFP. She's in Colorado. She, having founded two software companies, Judy brings a wealth of business expertise to ACA. I understand as few others can, the resilience and perseverance entrepreneurs need to succeed, is what Judy says. From the start, Judy embraced the ACA system and utilized it to the fullest. She feels the ACA system sped up the learning curve and helps her better serve her clients. Judy also appreciates the retainer model of pricing and the fact that it eliminates any conflict of interest. Judy has also leveraged the community aspect of ACA, whether it's an accountability group or connecting with other members in Colorado or across the country. She has taken full advantage of this outstanding resource. So welcome, Judy, and thank you for joining us today.
You bet.
And Ted Euler just mentioned that he is an attorney. Ted has been a licensed attorney in Michigan since 1979 with extensive experience in real estate, estate planning, and taxation. Ted was the client of an ACA member and appreciated his advisor's help so much that Ted left the world of traditional law practice to become an advisor himself. Upon completion of the ACA training program in January 2000, Ted opened his financial planning practice in the, and I'm going to mess this up, Saugatuck, Douglas area.
He did not mess that up.
Oh, good.
He didn't mess
okay.
that up at all.
Where he works with families, retirees, and entrepreneurs. And welcome, Ted, and thank you as well for joining us today.
And just so you know, Kim did both of those bios off the top of her head.
I did. I have them memorized. On a personal note, both Judy and Ted have a wealth of knowledge within ACA, and both of them take full advantage of what ACA has to offer, and whatever they can't answer, although I don't know what there would be that you couldn't answer, but if there is anything by the end of this call that they can't answer, I will definitely get answers for you. So if you guys want to continue with your conversation, I'm sure both Derek and Bill have some specific questions. I'll just open it up to you guys.
Go ahead, Judy.
Would you like us to ask questions of you, or do you have specific questions about what order do you think will work best to get you what you need? Should I talk about why I like ACA, or?
Last time we did this, you talked a little bit about more precisely how you got here and
okay.
why you stay.
Yeah, kind of. All right, so I'll start with that. My background is in high tech, so I am what they call a career changer. And I have a CFP. I joined ACA, I think, in 2007, and I came from having had a few less than wonderful experiences with commission-based advisors, and I'd always liked finance and stuff. So, I had an MBA, but I went back and got a master's in finance and then was looking for a way to have my own business. I didn't want to have a big firm. I didn't want to work for a big firm. I wanted to have a lot of flexibility, and I wanted some way that I felt could be where I could be objective and really keep the client's best interest up front. So that was just based on some personal experiences I had had. So at NAPA, I met folks from ACA, and the model just seemed like it was exactly what I'd been looking for. And so I signed up pretty quickly and went through the training. And what I found was, I think paying the fees and going through the training, it helped me ramp up, I would say, at least a year faster, probably more, than had I not had the group and the organization, the resources, and all the training that was available. So I feel like it was a great investment from that and that's a bell ringer. And and since then, it's actually been great. You know, as I go through different growth phases and adopt different kinds of ways of operating, there's so much information available that it comes from the most interesting places. I mean, I recently have had some questions about certain kinds of annuities, and there happens to be somebody who's in New Hampshire who has very specialized knowledge from a previous career in that background. So he and I have had several phone calls, and it's really helped me present a real good solution for my clients. So, I'm a fan of the organization and the people. I feel like there are a lot of very intelligent people and what's in the organization. And what's really nice is that everyone is sharing of whatever their special knowledge is. It's kind of it's a rare thing. So I think there's this common thread throughout that everyone wants everyone to be successful.
Judy, you talked about the training and how you felt that helped maybe propel your business along at a better clip than maybe working on your own and your owners. Is the training, what is the, I know this is a very broad brush question, but what is the training? Is the training on how to run a business? Is the training more on how to do actual plans for clients? Is it, I'm sure all of the above, but can you maybe touch a little more on the training process?
Yeah, I was going to say yes. It's the training, there's different components. Maybe Ted, do you want to answer that one? Or do you want me to take it?
Yeah, go ahead. You were in training more recently than I.
Okay. There's different components. There are written and online materials, and there's a series of training calls that you go through a period of time, and then you you're kind of in a training class, mm-hmm. and it's really nice because you've got different people, you know, all over the country that you're going through the online and the conference call class with, and then you actually spend a week in Denver kind of on-ground training, and you get to kind of put faces and names with all those voices you've been hearing. And throughout, there's different topics that are the emphasis of each piece. So there are calls on setting up RIAs, and there are calls and training modules on how to market and get clients, how to, you know, position the value of what you're offering, that kind of thing. But then there's also the nitty-gritty, the hands-on. These are the tools. This is the process. This is how it works. And then there's kind of all the supporting pieces that go around it. So after you've been through the on-ground training, there's actually somebody who's in a concierge role that sort of is a really nice nudge that keeps you moving and helps you establish your goals and your time frames for getting certain things done. So people, for example, who are transitioning one kind of business into a fee-only ACA business, you know, there are a set of issues that they typically have. Somebody like me who started with nothing, I have a different set of issues. Mm-hmm. So they've got the programs in place to accommodate that for depending on where you're coming from.
Mm-hmm. I see.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does, sir.
Yeah, so it starts with like as soon as you join, you can get started right away on this self-study portion of the training. And then there are virtual classrooms. And then it ends with the actual training doesn't actually end, but then it kind of gets completed in Denver at the group instruction, like Judy said, and then the concierge goes on for another year, 2 years.
Okay.
And then we have the annual conference, and there are a lot of sessions there that are geared for different people at different stages of their business. And a lot of opportunities to kind of meet and make connections and just work through issues at the conference as well.
from a planning perspective, I mean, when you're working with clients, is I'm assuming there's software that you're using for making projections and that sort of thing, or needs analysis. I'm guessing here, but if that is the case, is there software that's used from ACA, or do people use their own software, or how do you kind of generally work on that line?
One of the things that's kind of interesting is that different people have different approaches to the technology. There are tools within ACA that a lot of people use. They don't use anything outside of that set of tools, and most of those are spreadsheet-based, pretty straightforward. One of the concepts or the philosophies in the ACA is that it's a comprehensive financial planning process. So one of the aspects that you're working with clients is the fact that by going on this retainer, when stuff happens, you know, you can respond. And so it's a little different from completing a plan, calling it good, and then moving on to something else. It's actually one of the things that I liked about it was that it was a dynamic process. So you're never really producing a final document.
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of interactively doing a lot with the client as you go. And so the tools are set up to do that. And then the software that, there's a lot of software, I use a lot of software that isn't part of ACA, but a lot of other advisors use it as well. And there's a big educational component, I think, to the ACA program. And so it's educating your clients and showing them the different options and helping them make those educated decisions. And so the interactivity, I think, is really valuable. I have found that very useful.
Okay.
Ted, what about you?
Yeah, what Judy essentially was saying, in a way, is that we acknowledge at the outset that we get people coming from a lot of different places. This isn't, a post-secondary education. We like to think of our stuff as sort of real-world-based, non-commissioned type work. And as you two have already made clear, the people who come to us come from a lot of different places. And we do not try to homogenize everything into one little tiny package that everybody fits. If somebody comes in with and insurance expertise, but is weak in estate planning, there's a module that is on estate planning. If you don't need to spend much time on the insurance, you just, take the quiz to demonstrate some capacity and move on. Where our strength is, I think, is that we fill in the missing pieces, or we provide confidence where maybe some confidence is lacking, and we do it as a group so that while you're learning, you might also be teaching. You might also be helping someone else. Our instruction stuff is very intentional, and it's acknowledgement that people learn in different ways. Some people learn by reading, some by listening, some by looking at videos. So we offer the educational process in all the different ways, so that you have a shot at everything a couple of times. And you can pick the best way for you to move through it. And once you're in, you have access to the spreadsheet-based tools that Judy just mentioned. But I think more importantly, we assume that you have some skills. You've already done a lot of this work. But more importantly, we all work together. And we're always kind of improving our skills at integrating the different things into something that makes sense to the client.
Okay.
And I say all of that having been a client. My wife and I were a client of Burt Whitehead's for 5 or 6 years. And he started telling me early on, he told me in 1995 that I should consider becoming an advisor because I had the right sort of approach. I was in the world of straight up law practice, billable hours, which has a conflict of interest built into it too. You're actually being paid to be inefficient.
Mm-hmm.
And I hated that. I hated all of that. It felt like people only called me when it was too late, things like that. Mm-hmm. So I got into this from, I wasn't doing research. I didn't even know I wanted to do something else, or I didn't even know what was possible. I just kind of thought I was stuck. And Bert opened my eyes to possibilities. So when I came into this, I hadn't done any research or anything else. This was just what was in front of me, the next right thing. Mm-hmm. And I have never for a moment doubted that my decision, because I paid thousands of dollars to become a member. And then I went through the class in January of 2000, I think. And I was, within a month, my dentist came to me. And he said, I really like, and I'd been telling him what I was doing. I was telling everybody who would listen. My dentist said, I really like the sound of that. And I've been hearing for a while that fee only is the way to go. Can I be a client? And I ran him through a fee calculator that had been gifted to me by ACA. And I charged him $7,500. And there is no way on God's green earth I would ever have charged him any more than, $1,000. That was to do what he wanted me to do. And essentially, ACA paid for itself in two clients that I would never have had anyway. So that's my take on this.
Now, that's a great point. Can you profile a typical client, the engagement, and how these clients come to you, how you market?
It helps to really enjoy talking with people and being curious about how people live and how they make money. And it helps to have at least some people you can go to at the outset and start talking to them about what you do, practicing talking about what you do. But we've had people who move from one state to another and start up and kind of hit the ground running. There are some commonalities among our clients, but not very many. For instance, I thought that the people who would flock to me were young marrieds. Help them buy their first house, help them start saving, putting money into 401k or IRAs, whatever would be available to them. What I found is that people who came to me were people getting ready to retire, and they were worried whether or not they had enough. So my typical client actually trends older than I thought, but I'm not sure that's all that uncommon. Some of it has to do with geography. People in the San Jose area are going to be dealing with stock option issues that I never see in West Michigan. So look around you. You already have your feet on the ground in a community, and I work with a woman in Boston, and she works with people who are employees of Fidelity. She has clients who are employees of Fidelity. Who would have thought? So people come in with their own sense of an ideal client, who they want to work with, and then the clients sort of self-select. How do they find us? More and more people, more and more writers are talking about this, and the mass media stuff. There is it's already been talked about fee-based earlier in this call. Clients don't generally, or consumers don't really understand the difference between fee-based and fee-only. So you will be called upon to explain that difference, if in fact you do practice fee-only. And you'll have to use terms that make sense to your audience. So one of the things that we learn is how to talk with people about what we do. So there is no profile. There's no straight-up profile. How do people find us? Virtually all of my business is referral. I don't advertise. I publish a column, and I published a column in a newspaper, and now it's distributed on Facebook and by email. That's just always running in the background to let people know I'm still here. But pretty much everybody who comes to see me is a referral. How about you, Judy?
Yeah, I have a lot of referrals. I will say, one thing I will say is that there is such a spread within the organization of who the ideal clients are, There are advisors who really focus on wealth management clients. There are advisors who focus on school teachers or retired military or retired clergy. I have a variety of people, but I tend to have a lot of engineers and scientists because I have that background, and I'm in an area with a lot of technology. So for me, it's pretty fun to hear about what they're doing. And that's actually part of that's kind of what I thought I would get going in. And then, part of it's different. I also have what I call solo women. And some are, they're widowed, divorced, never married, whatever. And I get such a kick out of them. So I would say I'm kind of 50-50 referrals, and, they find my website, and they may find it through NAPFA, ACA, or SPA, but they're looking, in general, I would say if it's not a referral, they've read about fee-only somewhere, and they've tracked me down based on that, or it might have been some, PR thing I've done. I've always had a pretty bad networking allergy, so I don't do the networking events and stuff, and it's really worked out just great.
Do we get a couple of new people join the call, Kim?
Yeah, Jackie Thompson is on.
I'm sorry?
Jackie Thompson.
Hi, Jackie. Welcome to the call. So, Jackie, don't be shy if you have some questions for Judy and Ted, please.
Okay. I actually listened to this a couple of years ago, and I just wanted to go through it again.
Oh, great.
See if my story changed?
I don't know. I'll let you know.
Where are you, Jackie, geographically?
I'm in San Rafael, California, just north of
San Francisco. So I'm curious, Jackie, a couple years ago you listened to some member prospect calls, and I'm curious, so what has something changed and
I have mostly a tax practice, and my financial planning is really limited, and I really seem to kind of I was with Garrett for a number of years, and my practice is really focused on people who need financial planning but can't afford it. So my fees are generally, pretty low. Most of my plans are, in the neighborhood of $1,000 to $1,500. But most of them end up becoming tax clients as well. So I'm still kind of ambivalent about how much I want to commit to financial planning.
Oh, okay.
And I feel like if I join Cambridge, I'm really making more of a commitment, more than
that
I'm doing right now.
Yes.
This is Derek again. It seems on the research I've done, there seems to be a large number of folks who do have a strong tax background. Seems to be a fair number of enrolled agents. Any requirement? I know there's probably not a requirement, but could you guys maybe speak on that and how you've feel like you've attracted EAs and where that may lead folks who are not EAs or have a tax practice with Cambridge?
Sure. Neither Judy nor I came to this with any sort of tax practice, and I had somebody else do my tax returns. Still do, but I had somebody else do my tax returns before I got here. No, there's no requirement. We recommend, but never require, that our members at least try to do their clients' tax returns, because a fair amount of the advice we give over the course of a year is tax, if not tax driven, at least it's tax related. Mm-hmm. In terms of any sort of reallocation, we want to look at the tax impact. We do tax projections. My clients get emails from me each quarter saying it's time to send your estimate in, and And if your income has changed, then let's look at the numbers. So having said all of that, there are ACA advisors who do not do taxes, who have a tax aversion, or they really want to focus on other parts of this work, and they maybe set up a relationship with a taxpayer who they can work closely with. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the people who you see having that EA after their name mm-hmm. got their EA when they came. They didn't come here already armed with it. I was able to, because I'm a licensed attorney, I was able to start doing tax returns without the EA. I learned by working in Franklin, Michigan with the original office during a tax season.
Okay.
And again, having said all that, there's no requirement that you do taxes, but boy, it sure is, you can sure do a lot better job for your clients if you either do taxes or really understand them and can give your advice accordingly.
So you do, so Ted, at this time you do tax returns for your clients?
Yes, and my wife and I still shake our heads at this. I love it. She finally diagnosed it. She said, you like putting puzzles together, and a tax return for me is a puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, and I actually go the other way and do some freestanding tax returns, because I have found that that's a great way to demonstrate my value to somebody. And
sure.
That person might not become a financial planning client. And I've told people, you don't need me. You know, you're okay, or I'm too expensive for you.
Mm-hmm.
But they send me other people.
Right. It opens up some referral opportunities, I guess.
Oh, a lot of them. Absolutely.
Yeah. So then,
I, on the other hand, I came in without having done taxes. And I did taxes for the first few years, and I think it was a really good way to get deep down into where the finances of clients are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think tax planning is great, but I am not doing tax returns anymore at all. So, yeah, like Ted said, everybody can choose what makes the most sense for them. And I still, you know, spend a lot of time doing tax update classes, and I think there's tremendous value in understanding the ins and outs of the client tax returns and demonstrating how we save money on things like, just Roth conversions and shifting income from here and there and harvesting tax losses and all that stuff. But I personally am no longer actually doing the returns because I live in Colorado and it interfered with ski season.
Oh, God bless you.
So, you know, you got to pick your priority.
You got to pick your priority, yeah. Powder day is a powder day.
It is, and, you know, I just, that
good
was
for you.
A choice.
Okay. So when you're doing some of these tax education events, I think you called them something along that line, you have a software program, and you have to be using something that you're working from to give these seminars or education or workshops to prospects and or clients. Is that something that you're getting from ACA or something that you have a program on the side or?
Oh, you know, when I was referring to education, I mean during the course of an appointment with an individual client.
Oh, okay. I thought this was more of a marketing concept. Okay,
no,
so
no,
sitting with
no.
the client,
the
talking about Roth. Okay,
is,
gotcha.
You're going to get clients. You have of course, the ones that just are completely hands-off, but I think a larger percentage of the clients are people that really want to understand a little bit of the rationale, maybe a lot of the, you know, the rationale and the logic behind the recommendations that are being made. Mm-hmm. And so you're demonstrating your value by showing the different tax savings. There's tax planning software and all kinds of tools available. So it's a combination, but it's not at a seminar level. It's at actually an individual client level.
I see. Okay.
And I just want to interject just to make sure we all are understanding everything. It's not a requirement to do the tax return for a client. In fact, like Ted was saying, and both Judy, they don't do the tax returns for their clients. But going through the training, there is a list of certain tax classes that are required. So if you are not a CPA or an EA already, and you have not taken tax training within the last 5 years, you are required to take a tax class, and we have a list of those that you can take them from.
Mm-hmm.
So the tax knowledge is important to learn and understand, like they were both saying. It's just not a requirement to do the tax returns for your client.
Yeah, philosophically, we think that's what differentiates us from any other type of advisor, is
yeah.
that we integrate in one office, in one set of appointments, virtually all of the client's financial issues.
Excuse me, I'd like to ask, do these classes incur additional expenses? You know, if you're requiring, say, if someone doesn't have the specific CPA exam or CPA certification, and you're saying that you do kind of require them to take some additional tax preparation courses, is this something that's going to incur additional fees for this additional training?
Yes. I mean, that if you don't have certain things, that's something you'll pay for on your own. There's a list of recommended suppliers or sources or, you know, resources. But for the certifications and stuff, I mean, it's for the professional credentials and stuff, you kind of need to go through the different organizations.
An income standpoint, Ted, you mentioned your dentist came to you. You charged a $7,500 fee. I've read on the website there's retainer fees. I've seen some other folks' websites who are ACA members who maybe do, planning on a as-needed basis. Come back to me in a couple of years. We'll keep you up to date. Versus an ongoing, annual retainer. How do you guys kind of break out your practices in that respect? 60% of my clients are retainers, 40%, are a little bit of planning here, and then they come back to me as they feel needed or necessary. Can you maybe touch on that concept or idea a little bit, please?
Yeah, my surmise is that where you see advisors talking about touch-ups, we come in every so often, they've probably done what we call a paid first appointment, where we do planning for, say, a set time period and maybe three questions, two or three issues,
mm-hmm.
and charge a fee for that time slot, and the clients walk out with the recommendations typed up, and,
yep.
and there's no – there. Well, most do it without any follow-up or implementation.
Mm-hmm.
And then they might say, you can come back one more time for half of that fee, or a touch-up, or
mm-hmm.
a follow-up, or an additional question or two. And again, I'm speaking kind of generically.
Sure.
If this is the path that you take, you would write your own script.
Mm-hmm.
But we have we generally suggest that advisors work with clients on a full retainer basis, where you charge X amount for a year or some time period. And then maybe 60 or 70% of that in subsequent years. And the way internally that I justify charging more the first year is I have more appointments with my clients the first year, getting to know them, and I don't have to do a full insurance review every year.
Right.
Maybe just the first year, and then make sure that their insurance is keeping up with their net worth, for instance. So when those fees are quoted in that setting, it's typically, those are the two dividers. We can also do things, I call them projects, where somebody comes in and they want wills, which I can draft, and not everybody in ACA can, wills, and they just retired and they want some help moving their 401k somewhere. So I'll help them with the paperwork and make some recommendations and do their wills, and I'll quote them a fee, and that's for two or three appointments. So there's that variety available to you.
Okay.
And I warn you, as you think about this, most people run the risk of doing something like charging way too little for any part of that because maybe you have trouble quoting a big fee. Mm-hmm. And if you're in a, you know, when I practice law, I just quote an hourly rate. And then sometimes I was amazed at what that climbed up to over 6 months. But if you've done selling of, you know, insurance product or something like that, it never comes up how much you're getting paid. So you're never saying, oh, by the way, I'm going to make $5,000 out of this. So some people have an aversion to saying the high number. So they'll say a smaller number. Mm-hmm. And then I'll get a call saying, I need to raise my fees. How do I do that? They say, well, pay a higher number. You know, that's.
So
I'm just saying that, you know, maybe as a prophylactic that be aware that no matter what you're doing, unless you're really aggressive or so wildly comfortable in your own skin that nobody can touch you, people default to a lower fee and find a way to justify that by saying, well, I'm not going to provide as many services to these people. Well, then they don't get what they really need, and you don't get paid what you really need to get paid.
Right.
I started out doing both full retainers and projects, trying to do the financial review ones, and I only do full retainers now. I think at some point I may go back and add the project ones in there, but what I found was I gave away too much information, and it ended up being hard for me to kind of not respond when people would follow up with questions with just one more question and one more question. So right now, anyway, I just do full retainers, and that seems to work well, and it keeps my billing, you know, obligations and stuff minimal. If I end up where I have a slow period in my practice and I want to just fill some things in short term, then I feel like I can re-add the financial review option selectively. So I think everybody does what suits their personalities too. There's some people that really like a more transaction oriented business, and some want the longer term relationships, you know, so we're all different, and you kind of end up figuring out what you enjoy the most.
Yeah. Is there and again, I'm sure just as you've just kind of spoke to, is there a recommended number of clients once you get to this point? Maybe it's time to bring on an additional advisor. And again, I'm sure that's individual to each person, but I mean, do you guys kind of have a feel for that? Is it more of an income base, or is it more of a certain number of advisors, and how much time you plan on allocating with that client over the course of the year? So, you know, Derek, I can't handle any more than 60 clients, and at the fees that I charge, that is fine for my income. Or, you know what, I'm always looking for more clients, and I'll find a way to continue bringing on more clients.
There are a lot of advisors who have closed practices. They're not taking new clients.
Mm-hmm.
And so they refer those to new ACA members, which is really nice when you're just starting out, because you get these referrals from people who know about the ACA model, their family members and stuff, and those advisors aren't taking anybody. So it's really your choice. Some people have multi-advisor practices and really have a larger scale in mind. Other people have sort of by design, you know, want to have a smaller practice and not bring on staff. So it's really your choice. But there are some fairly standard breakdowns, I think. You get to certain points where you realize you need an admin or you need a this, that kind of thing.
And we do train people, some freestanding, some, you know, to work remotely or for you to handle scheduling, to maybe help you with pyramids, help you with implementation, maybe help you with tax data entry, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have training for people like that. And if you were to hire somebody, we would be in a position to help train them. The first question you ask, though, you know, do you have a number of clients at which you recommend? I do have a number in mind, but I don't want to say it because that could somehow become a script for you. In my experience, especially when I'm coaching advisors who are maybe transitioning to a larger practice, you know, they went out, signed up some people, thought, okay, I better get all this work done, so they sort of ratchet back, and then they want to hit the ground running again. Well, they've kind of dried up their supply, so they have to sort of re-energize marketing, get out there, give talks, whatever. What they had failed to do is to build capacity. They ran it as, you know, so as not to spend money. They weren't really trying to make money. They were trying to make sure they didn't spend too much. And work really hard to build a practice, coach for a while, feel like they get caught up, and then they realize, hey, wait, this is my, you know, my family needs this income. I got to make more money. What I would suggest is that when you get to 20 retainer clients, for instance, you're probably going to start to feel some oppression. Some. And if you just work more, then you won't do anything differently. You'll just work more. But instead of necessarily hiring somebody, maybe you're not charging enough if you fill up pretty quickly. You know, why did they all write checks?
Right.
And so if you jump into this, be thinking about building capacity as early as possible.
And
you're comfortable signing all those people.
Right. And tell me, real quick, when you say build capacity, do you mean literally have the potential to add a staff member, to add additional technology, office space, that sort of thing?
Well, I'm not too worried about office space unless you plan to have somebody sitting, you know, out by the front door or whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking more in terms of if there's a part of the work that takes that you have trouble getting to, or that you don't want to do. I hate doing data entry for the investment stuff, you know, just updating the inventory for the client. So I found myself, sadly, I'm going to bust myself here, I found myself pushing away some pretty nice, pretty attractive clients because they had kind of complicated investment portfolios, and I didn't want to do all the work.
Right.
You know, it was an area where I felt a little incompetent.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking with a friend of mine who loves doing that sort of stuff, and she said, well, why don't you help me with my legal questions, and you look at my client's will, and I'll take care of the data entry for you. Well, I went out and signed some of my biggest clients, like within 2 or 3 months, just because I had capacity.
I see. Okay.
So, does anybody else have any other questions? We're coming up on the hour. Bill, did you have anything else, or I don't know?
Well, most of it's been answered, but just quickly, since Jackie joined, one of the other groups that I am looking at is Garrett, and how would you compare ACA versus Garrett?
It sounds somewhat similar. Certainly, Garrett didn't have the emphasis on tax, proficiency, and I think for the most part, my experience with Garrett was people that were joining really didn't have any kind of a strong financial background. They needed an awful lot of support.
Okay.
You know, they didn't come from either, you know, the legal field or tax field. You know, they were basically just transitioning from, it was a totally new career for them. So I found the training a little elementary. I just didn't find that I got the support that I wanted. I didn't feel like I really got my money's worth from them.
Okay,
so Garrett's a great organization, don't get me wrong, but comparing ACA with Garrett is like comparing apples with oranges, because Garrett is on an hourly model,
mm-hmm.
which is quite different from all the way from the philosophical level all the way up to actually doing the work for the client and creating your business, and ACA is just a whole different animal. I don't know if Ted or Judy, you want to interject there, but it's just so different. It's hard to compare.
Yeah, I think there's a lot more pressure on the pipeline when you're
mm-hmm.
hourly.
It's a natural comparison, but it might not necessarily be an apt comparison.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Do we have any other questions? I thought I heard somebody else join earlier, and I don't know if that person has any questions. They can certainly speak up. Okay, well, Bill and Derek, like I told you on the call earlier, I will send you some emails and introduce you to some members and try and focus on your actual areas. And Derek, also, and what you and I talked about yesterday, I'll still be focusing on that. And then if after we hang up, if you guys have any questions, feel free to let me know. And we're here to help you.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you,
Judy. Thank you for setting this up.
Ted.
Very informative. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Good,
Ted, Judy, thank you for your help. Appreciate it, guys. Great information.
Oh, thanks,
Judy,
for spending
appreciate
some
your
time.
Time. Yes, indeed.
Maybe we'll all meet someday.
I hope so.
Thanks,
guys.
Thanks, everyone.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.